Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Stu Baca, and I'm a Gen X grown-up, and I support Gen X grown-up on Patreon, and you should too at patreon.com/GenXGrownUp.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
Gen X grown-up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Welcome back, Gen X grown-up podcast listeners, to this, the backtrack edition of the Gen X grown-up podcast. I am John. Joining me, as always, is Mo. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going?
Of course, George is here. Hey, George.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
4 decades ago, if you can believe it, young Alex Rogan got the highest score ever on his favorite game, Starfighter. He's shocked to find out the game was a training and recruitment tool for actual intergalactic pilots, and his performance has earned him entry into an elite space force. So now, on its 40th anniversary, we're remembering and celebrating the landmark Gen X sci-fi adventure film, The Last Starfighter. George is giddy. He's so excited. We're finally doing this backtrack. You heard of the last episode.
He's been wanting to do this. Yeah.
I know, right? He's like, when? It's like, how about the 40th anniversary? He's like, let's do it. So yeah, we are here. Mm. There's so much to talk about with The Last Starfighter. We're going to get to that in just a minute. First, though, it's time for some fourth listener email. If you are a listener and you're not one of the three of us, you are our fourth listener. And the listener this time around that wrote in is Jonathan S. The subject line of Jonathan's email was school required reading, based on our recent backtrack. Yeah, it's been about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Yeah, thank you, Jonathan. Here's what he has to say. John, Mo, and George, great episode on school required reading. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
I was going to bring up two books, but one of them was mentioned by George, Lord of the Flies. The other one is in the dystopian genre, Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. You know that one,
yeah.
Mo?
Oh, yeah. Big time. That was
a great
George book.
Does, too. Do you? Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know that one. He goes on to say, in my high school, we read both 1984 and Brave New World, as they represent two very different dystopian futures.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I remembered about Aldous Huxley is another famous author died the same day that he did, C.S. Lewis.
Oh, really? Okay. Interesting.
I didn't know that. However, both of their deaths did not get a lot of attention at the time because they died on November 22nd, 1963.
Seriously?
Anybody? Anybody?
Yeah. Oh,
that was the day that Kennedy was assassinated in the motorcade.
Holy cow.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So those two big authors died on the same day. Not a peep. There was a much bigger thing going on. Oh, man. Thank you, Jonathan, for writing. And we're glad you enjoyed the school reading episode. We love hearing what listeners think about the episodes, what they brought up, and memories that they bring back to you. Hey, listener, if you would like your email featured here on the show, it is drop dead easy. All you have to do is hit us up via email, just like Jonathan S. did, at podcast@genxgrownup.com. Look, we read every single one, and most of them will eventually make the show. All right. I'm about to drop a quarter in Starfighter, see if I could beat Alex's score. I don't think it's going to happen, but we're going to give it a shot right after this break. Over the past few weeks, we've been trying out Factor Meals, and they're meals that come straight to your door. They deliver them to you in the mail. They drop on the front door in this freezer pack. And it's a great way to eat stress-free. And this spring, you can get delicious, ready-to-eat meals. They're fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved. And here's the cool thing, as we've all found out. You throw them in the microwave for 2 minutes, and they're ready to eat and not even requiring cleanup.
And if you can't find something on their menu that you like, then you're just way too picky.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have over 35 options. Mm. You know, they have things like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan, Veggie, and we even tried the vegetarian one, which was really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just the regular meals, but they've also got all these add-on packs, which I really love. These are things like, you know, breakfast or on-the-go lunches or little snacks, even like beverages that want to help you stay fueled and feel good good all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So really, I mean, like they say on their site, what are you waiting for? And they're not kidding. You can get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals by heading over to Factor.
Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can get back to doing what you love this spring.
Are you looking for good gourmet meals? Try the meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus.
Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff.
Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking.
We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for lowest carbon footprint meals.
So head to factormeals.com/GenX50 and use code GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code GenX50 at factormeals.com/GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. You're listening to Gen X Grown Up. But if you have a friend who's not yet listening, why not? Tell them about us. They'll thank you later.
Alex Rogan lives in a small trailer park in the California mountains. He has a dream to go to college, start a career, and most of all, to get out.
Get your chance. Important thing is when it comes, you gotta grab it with both hands.
Then, one night, a mysterious stranger offers Alex an opportunity he never dreamed of. Why was Alex chosen? And will he ever return?
Where are we going?
Trust me. Oh, you're gonna love it. Love it.
Look out!
Oh, dear.
The Last Starfighter. His adventure in space is about to begin.
We're talking in this episode about the 1984 science fiction adventure film, The Last Starfighter. Now, this film actually came out July 13th of 84, so we're a little bit ahead of the 40th anniversary, but you know, a lot going much. On this. There's so much this summer. There's so much 40th anniversary stuff this year that we went ahead. We're going to talk about Last Starfighter now while we can, while we have the time. And so I asked George, as I often do, to dig into the numbers, you know, the finances and the reviews and the ratings and its opening weekend. So George, why don't you share with us what you found out about The Last Starfighter? Or though you probably already knew, actually.
Well, <Yeah. laughs> I mean, there's some things that people who are fans of the movie probably know about the numbers as far as box office is concerned. And of course, that's a disappointment at the fact that it didn't garner as much of a revenue stream as the studio wanted in order to really do more with this franchise. It definitely was set up to have a second movie that could have come out from it on the way that the movie ended.
100%.
But let's talk a little bit. So the box office for this film in North America brought in a total of $29 million in 1984. That's pretty good money. However, they spent $15 million making the film. The worst part is that 14 of the $15 million that was spent was just for CGI. So that means the actors, the set designers, the costume people, the director, the writer, they all had to share $1 million.
That's crazy. That is just insane. That is just insane.
Well, you know, $1 million will rent a really nice trailer park. So that checks out. That lines up.
Yeah.
I told the actors, just wear what you normally wear. Just come in.
Right. There's no catering. There's no wardrobe.
I mean, that's not too far off. If you look at a lot of scenes, they're in their plaid jeans and everything. That probably was something they had in their closet.
Yeah,
you know, it's not uncommon.
Yeah.
Opening weekend, that very first weekend in July that they opened, $6 million spread across 1,287 theaters. That's what they released in. So it was a very wide release. They only did $6 million. It ended up being the third ranked film that weekend as far as box office budget is concerned. Mm-hmm. Not great, not awful. Yeah. But I know they were hoping for a lot more.
Kind of a weak opening.
No, sure.
Yeah. Now, you want to talk about VHS. There's not a lot of numbers out there for VHS sales and stuff like that. But we do have quite a bit of numbers available to us for DVD and Blu-ray sales. And the total of those sales, because there's been a couple of issues. There was one issue about 20 years ago, and then there was another issue not too long ago on Blu-ray. It's drawn in a total of about $10.8 million in sales through those. Again, not staggering, but serviceable, right? Like they didn't lose their shirt. They made a little
It's not nothing, for sure.
Yeah. It was in theaters for 24 weeks. And the reason why I wanted to put that out there is because in today's landscape, that would be a super mega hit.
That's like
if your movie stayed in theater 24 weeks,
that's like
that'd be
year.
Like the number one film of all time.
Yeah. Now if you get a week or two, it's pretty good.
Exactly. But it did have some stiff competition, as John mentioned earlier, for 40th anniversaries. The highest grossing film for 1984 brought in $3 billion. That's billion. With a B. And by the way, this film only came out 1 month before Last Starfighter. So Last Starfighter doesn't have any excuses about when it came out. That was Ghostbusters, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, there you go.
June of 84, $3 billion.
Just the previous, what did you say, a few weeks before, 1 month ahead of time? Well, you talked about the effects that so much of the budget, 95% of the budget, 90, whatever it is, a bunch of the budget was spent, 14 to 15 million. When I look at the effects on this, they actually look okay for the era. They're definitely, they haven't aged perfectly, but they don't look like garbage, you know? And I was looking like, who made these? They're very shiny. The textures aren't very textured, you know? It was all done on a Cray XMP computer. Like everything that wasn't a practical effect. It was an explosion or a costume or makeup or something like that. It was done practically, but everything that was digital, that $14 million, all done on Cray XMP computers.
Yeah, it was written in Fortran too, which I always thought was weird. but the graphics remind me a lot of like Tron, kind of like very flat,
not a shading.
I mean, they looked awesome. I mean, especially for the time, they looked amazing.
I've made the comment to John earlier. John and I both have Amigas, you know, back in our day. This kind of looks like something that was made with like 12 Amigas with video toasters hooked up to them. Kind of like Babylon 5, but not quite as good as Babylon 5.
Got Lightwave running and a Raptor renderer going. It's just an array of Amigas. It's very much that same early Babylon 5 look. Yeah. So the story, though, it felt really familiar. And so as we're researching for this, and what I'm doing, I'm watching the movie in one screen and I'm researching it in the other screen. I'm soaking it all in as I'm rewatching it. And the screenwriter, Jonathan Arbutel, the guy that wrote this, the idea for this movie came to him because he wandered into a video arcade and saw a young boy playing a game. And at the same time, he was reading the book about King Arthur called The Once and Future King. This is the one where he pulls the sword and suddenly he's going to be the king and all that. And he's like, what if the video game was the sword? Like, that's the this King Arthurian legend thing. And how that would impact this boy's life and his family and everything. And when you watch it like that, you're like, that is kind of the same kind of little allegory.
It is. Yeah.
Well, you don't even have to make that giant leap. They actually say that allegory in the movie. There's a line where
I missed it.
Yeah, there's a line where they're busting Centauri's chops using the old Excalibur trick again. Hey, Centauri.
Yeah, that's right. I did remember that. It didn't make the connection. You're absolutely right.
Wow. I mean, overall, though, the movie, I mean, even though it didn't do awesome in the box office, it did get some nods, though. I mean, as we talked about the graphics, like all the computers, there was actually only like 27 minutes of computer CG work that was done on it, but they used it well.
That's a third of the movie. That's a lot.
Yeah,
that's $500,000 per minute, ladies and gentlemen.
But they also did get an Oscar nomination for best visual effects that year, so you know, it got something out of it.
Take that, Super Bowl commercials.
You know, and some of those effects were out in space. Other parts of the effects were the Starfighter game itself, because computers could not make a game that looked like that. What you saw, what he was playing on the arcade cabinet, those were effects also, because they had to mock it up, because there was no computer that could do that in real time anywhere. So they had to render it and put it inside of there. Another stunning fact that I saw is that this film was shot in 40 days. 40 days. Now, with the budget, obviously they're not going to go long, but we're talking just 5 weeks is all you've got. That included not only the shooting, all the green screen and the work in the Gunstar and in the side of Centauri's Star Car, all of that.
Right.
Every bit of it shot 40 days. What a tight schedule to get that done. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. I mean, it took only 40 days, but they had that whole side story in it with, you know, Beta was in it.
The fake Alex. Yeah.
The fake Alex. So basically, when they did like a screen test, people really liked that whole side story of it, you know, with the whole beta. So they actually added a whole bunch of extra scenes. They had him come back and do a whole bunch of extra scenes.
Oh, good.
But also I heard apparently he had cut his hair before
that. Yes, right.
So he actually had to get like a wig or something to wear. So that's why beta looks a little weird in some of the scenes. So I guess it just worked because he's an android. So who cares?
He's a robot anyway, right? He would have a wig. Exactly. That makes sense.
You know, it was interesting because later on in like the late 80s, early 90s, if you were trying to find this in the old VHS store format that we're talking about earlier, it was really difficult for those video stores to get a hold of copies of this movie because Lorimar, one of the companies involved, they had closed down and the rights issues for this movie were in limbo and still are to this day. There have been people for decades talking about wanting to do a remake or a retelling or any of that kind of stuff because people love the story. It's the Excalibur Sword in the Stone, but set in video games and space battle. It's a brilliant idea, but they can't get the rights out of this, you know, listing hell because of the company closing.
Fired up. At 40 years ago and a $15 million budget and just barely making back the money that it needed to, this has become a landmark film for people of our generation because it cuts right through so many of the things that we enjoyed. We liked sci-fi. We were in the arcades, you know, we were struggling to find a place in the world because we're in our teens, all of that fit. And then it was kind of in this, and because it was super popular, sometimes I felt like other people didn't know about it. Like, have you not seen this film? Why is it super popular? But then everybody had, it just wasn't the top of everything because 84 was such a year that it just got buried underneath everything. It was even better. Okay. When we get back, we're going to talk about the people that made this happen and some really interesting information we found about the film itself. Stick around.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listenersurvey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
Be sure to subscribe to or follow Gen X Grown Up wherever you listen. And while you're there, rate and review the show too. It helps more than you know.
Alex Rogan dreamed of traveling beyond the stars.
Step into my office.
Hey. But Alex didn't find his dream. His dream.
Oh my gosh!
Found him.
Join the other recruits. We are under attack.
I don't believe this.
Alex Rogan is the last starfighter. Rated PG. Sneak preview July 6th and 7th at select theaters.
As John alluded to just a few moments ago, it's time to talk about the people who made one of my favorite films from the 80s. First up, the man from Jaws the Revenge, Lance Guest, as Alex Rogan and Beta Alex
that
Rogan.
Classic movie.
By the way, that's about the only two films on his resume, really.
Really?
He has not done a lot before since. He's done some bit parts, like single episodes of TV things and stuff like that, but his career just never took off. And I thought that was such a shame because for me, he was one of the best everyman kind of characters of that era. I really thought he could have done more work in that genre.
I thought he was good. You could see that he wasn't a seasoned actor, but he was good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was able to emote and get across what he needed to. Yeah. And he could do action. I thought he was great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Next up, Robert Preston, the man who was originally cast in the theater play and then the film of The Music Man as the main character. He played Centauri, and this was his last screen credit.
Yeah, he died right after this.
So kind of sad, but boy, he really showed all those theatrical chops in this role. Because the Centauri role is key to the film. It's kind of the Merlin a little
bit
of the Excalibur story. And he's only in the first third of the film and then the very last part, because you think he's dead. So he's not in the meat and potatoes section of the film, but he has such a presence that to this day, if you think Last Starfighter, he's one of the main characters that comes to mind.
It's really kind of sad and poignant that he has a death scene in this film and it was his final film. It made that death, because I knew that going into this rewatch. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. Now let me watch it that way. And it's even has more gravity knowing that he really did pass away after this film. But he was amazing in it. He brought heart to the film. There was a reason. Absolutely. There was something going on. He was definitely the heart. Oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
Right after that, my next one in the four people arc that I want to tell about the talent, Dan O'Herlihy, who played Grig. He was the navigator to Alex Rogan's Starfighter. The thing that most of us might remember him from the 80s, if you know, you didn't really know him from this because he's in full lizard skin makeup the whole time, right? But he was the old man in both RoboCop and RoboCop 2. So the guy who was in charge of the whole corporation that was really dead, evil dude.
Oh, is he? Is that him in there?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's him.
Yeah. I thought the alien makeup reminded me of Enemy Mine a little bit.
Yeah.
The lizardy thing. Just a bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very close. And then finally, to round out my top four people of the film, Catherine Mary Stewart. She played Maggie Gordon, the girlfriend to Alex Rogan.
What a sweetheart. You know,
she was caught up in the whole tale with the betas that Mo mentioned earlier. She did a couple of other films in the 80s. She did a great horror film, Night of the Comet, that was really kind of a culty classic thing about what happens if the only people left on Earth are actors who are slightly older than the teenagers they're playing.
That's the answer. That film was the answer.
Right. Yeah. Then she also played in another cult classic, Weekend at Bernie's, which was another fun film. She played a similar role that what she did here. I think she could have done a lot more with her career, but you know, as things happen, she just didn't, you know, turn into this big 80s starlit kind of thing. And it's a damn shame because I really enjoyed her performance in this film.
Yeah. Yeah. Really cute. Really sweet. I think she was convincing as Alex's girlfriend. And I think it was to a lesser degree, a little bit more of the heart of the movie. It was a thing that drew him back to Earth kind of thing and wanted to protect Earth for the people he loved, his family and her and everything. So, you know, one person you didn't mention, George, was Robin Williams.
Why would you mention Robin Williams?
I did not mention him for good reason. He's not in the goddamn movie.
Why would you mention him?
That's right. He was actually offered the role of the evil Emperor Zur, the big guy, the floating guy with the big scepter. He's the one that's killing everybody. But he said no thanks. He passed on it. He could have been in this. What would that have done to this film? If Robin Williams, his manic energy, were the bad guy, that might have brought some more attention to this movie.
It would brought more attention.
I mean, I don't think he'd done his dramatic stuff yet at that point, so I don't know how he would have done in this role. It might have made it too comedic.
Maybe, but it's something to think about. He was like, it wasn't like they were talking to him. They offered the thing and he passed, so it could have happened.
Wow.
Yeah,
that would have been interesting. You know, John, cameo that should be near and dear to your heart and mine, Will Wheaton actually had a couple of scenes in this film. He was a friend of the character Lewis, who was Alex Rogan's younger brother. His speaking scenes that were in the film were deleted. They're on a cutting room floor somewhere. But he is visible in a couple of the scenes where he doesn't speak. Early on in the movie, he's running around in a trailer park in a red football jersey. You know, that whole setting up Alex's life stuff that they do at the very beginning of the film. You know, him walking through and all the people doing stuff. But then the part that I remember him the most for is in the very final scene, he's really kind of obscured and hidden in this crowd of people who are watching Alex and Catherine Mary Stewart's characters ride off into the sunset on The Last Starfighter. He's right behind Lewis Rogan, the younger brother.
Okay. And I miss. I'll have to go back and look. I didn't see
when him. I saw him in that scene later on after I watched it, after I saw Will Wheaton in Stand By Me and Next Generation, I was like, oh,
that's that kid.
Yep.
Yep.
You know, one thing I found when doing some research in this, that the movie is originally going to be called Gunstar, which I'm glad they didn't.
Makes sense.
But I'm glad they didn't, though, because I think Gunstar would have been too...
Oh, no, Last Starfighter is far better.
Like too militaristic, a little too...
Right.
Like too on-the-nose sci-fi. Like, Last Starfighter has a little more intrigue.
Exactly.
Like, what's The Last Starfighter all about? I think that's better.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
That would have been like the title Robot Jocks. Not a great title for that, man. Of course, not a great film either.
But yeah, it's just so on-the-nose. It's very technical, and it's exactly... Yeah. It leaves no intrigue. Yeah. When I started watching the film, and you were talking about how the effects look kind of Babylon 5-y, George, the opening credits, they are starkly in contrast with the opening scenes of the movie, because the opening scenes of the movie are, they're in a trailer park and they're dealing with somebody's power went out and everything, and he's not able to go on his thing. But the opening credits look like the sci-fi movie that it becomes, and it looked like either like a Superman credits or a Star Trek opening credits. They would zoom back into outer space, and the dramatic orchestra music was up there.
Yeah, they actually had like a really huge orchestra, I thought, for this.
It did. So that makes a lot of sense. The guy who was composing the music for this, I read an article, it was saying that he was looking at Star Wars and wanted to be bigger. So he hired more musicians than did the Star Wars theme to do this one. So that's probably why it feels that way.
That makes sense. I also noted that the effects, you said Babylon 5, I was thinking Spaceballs, like that era of effects. Not saying this is silly like Spaceballs, but that kind of effects, but way bigger budget.
I think Spaceballs was actually a little bit better. It felt more like practical robot.
It was practical.
It wasn't CGI
that's why.
In Spaceballs. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Very little miniatures and stuff.
Yeah. I noted that the remember when they give him basically a universal translator from Star Trek to wear on his collar,
right.
So he could understand all the aliens. That's the internal main board from a digital watch that they just took out and stuck on his collar.
I got a problem with that scene, by the way.
Yeah, tell me.
Yeah, what's that?
From that moment forward, he can understand all the alien speech, right? But they place it on his plaid shirt collar, yes?
Yep.
He immediately takes off that shirt and wears the Starfighter uniform for the rest of the movie, and yet he can understand all the aliens still.
It's built into the suit.
Oh, shut up. Plot hole.
They gave him 5 of them to use in whatever costumes he wanted to wear.
That's right.
I don't know.
One thing I heard a lot when I was kind of reading some of the old reviews of the movie, and a lot of people said that this movie was like very derivative of all the science fiction movies that came before it. And one of the examples is like they said like the car that the Star Car was actually looked like a DeLorean, and the alien, enemy mine. But the things they said is like the reason why they rated it higher, they said, it's derivative, but they did it well.
Sure.
That's what I keep saying. They did it well. It was very derivative. The storyline was pretty much a storyline we heard before. A lot of the tropes they used, they said, were very standard in a lot of the sci-fi movies at the time.
It's a much better version of a film than, say, like Battle Beyond the Stars, which far before that, right?
Yeah. It's kind of pigeonholing the movie to say, it's very derivative. A lot of movies pull ideas from a lot of places. This is a Arthurian legend sci-fi movie that was done quite well. And to say it's a derivative, well, it drew inspiration, but it's derivative is such a negative connotation. It just was inspired by other things, and I think it did a good job at it. So that's not fair. Now, I'd read that in the conception of the film that Butel was going to put Alex and his family living in the suburbs. That sounded great, but they changed it for 2 reasons. First and foremost, they put it in a trailer park because pretty much every other film of that era that involved Steven Spielberg was also in the suburbs. And they didn't want to do the same thing and be compared to Spielberg and go, it's another one of those, or it's not as good as this. Or like, let's do something totally different in a different place. So they chose a trailer park. And then also kind of added to the destitution of his family that shows they didn't live in the suburbs. They had financial problems, right? So they needed this help.
I can't help but think it had something to do with the financial situation as well.
That
for
couldn't
this
hurt.
Movie.
That couldn't hurt either.
A trailer park's got to be cheaper to film it.
You know, you mentioned Steven Spielberg in that factoid. It kind of does have a Steven Spielberg feel the film.
Sure.
Like, if you had seen him listed as an exec producer on this, you might not have been surprised, because it kind of has that, that everyday life kind of fish out of water, something extraordinary happening, but in a really heartwarming way feel that Spielberg was really fucking good at that time in his career.
And this is, again, inspiration from that. I wouldn't call it derivative.
So, the one thing about this movie, I remember when I saw it, the thing I thought was most disappointing to me, though, was like at the very end credits, they talk about the arcade game that's going to be released.
Oh,
boy.
God, yes. To this day.
And apparently Atari was supposed to do one, but I guess they said that because they didn't think the film was going to do well, they scrapped it. They said, we're not going to do that anymore. But that was disappointing, because I remember looking for it, like going to the arcade and like looking like, ooh, I wonder if they came up with that cart,
Of course.
John, do you remember 2 years ago how giddy I was when we went to Free Play Florida. Oh, somebody had a mock-up of Last Starfighter there. You couldn't control it. It was just running the scenes. No. But oh my God, I sat in front of that thing for like 20 minutes just imagining what it would be like to play that game.
It looked gorgeous. They did a great job. Oh. It looked like a prop. It looked great. Yeah.
You know, Atari is kind of a friend of the channel. Hey, Atari guys, if you're listening to this, we really want a Last Starfighter game.
Last Starfighter. Let's do it.
Oh my goodness. Woo. I'd buy that in a heartbeat.
Yep. I was noticing, speaking of that arcade cabinet, about like 10 or 15 minutes into the movie, remember, it's the pivotal moment where he gets the high score, right? He's playing the machine and he's getting close.
It's like a million points or something like that, right?
And I laughed out loud because every resident of the trailer park went running up to the main building to watch this kid, this high schooler, play an arcade machine. He's going to get the high score. Nobody cares about your high score.
Yeah.
Even if they love the kid.
Alex is going for the record.
Let's all run uphill with our walkers to the porch where the machine sits outside to watch him get the thing.
Four old guys playing poker. Like, yeah, bring your hand. Bring your hand. Let's go. Let's go. It's
ridiculous, but like charming also in a way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We also talked a lot about the digital effects. And I mentioned very briefly that I thought the practical effects, especially the aliens. When I knew how much $1 million left to do everything else, I thought the aliens looked great. I thought the spacesuits looked great.
Yep.
It didn't look cheesy. Yes, it's a rubber mask, but it's on properly, it's glued on properly, and it looked good. I was surprised at how good the practical effects were, especially knowing how little of the budget was left over for it.
Yeah, really.
You know, we talked about it earlier. We didn't get Moe's arcade game. We sure as hell didn't get my sequel. But we did get a Marvel Comics 3-issue limited series adaptation of the film, which, by the way, I have all three of them.
Do you?
They're in pretty solid condition. Yeah, you know I've got all three of those things. They're not terribly valuable, though, because, again, the film wasn't like this big, huge mega hit. I have like 8.5 to 9.0 quality, and they're only worth about like $8 to $10 a piece. Now, if I got them graded and encapsulated, they'd be worth a little bit more, like 35 or so.
But you spend so much money getting them done. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, for that film, it might kind of be worth it because I really love that film.
So was the comic series a continuation or it was just a reproduction of the series?
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. All right. I'd like to see that because there's no limitations there. They can do whatever they want. And with the art,
sure.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
I mean, they actually did a novelization of it too. Alan Dean Foster wrote it. He wrote Alien. Really? He wrote a whole bunch of like big novelizations, but Alan Dean Foster, which I actually was on the hunt for trying to find. I don't think it's in print anymore, but he was a really good writer and he really did good novelizations. So I'd like to find that because I'm sure he expanded it pretty well.
If I'm not reading between the lines too critically here, I think it's fair to say that we're all fans of this movie. We all like this movie. Fair?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
All right. When we get back from this break, I'm going to ask each of you to pick a favorite scene from the movie. Got to think about it. A favorite scene to champion from the film. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
Each episode of Gen X Grown Up has show notes loaded with links where you can learn more about our topics. And there's even more to see and hear over at genxgrownup.com.
For every Earthling who's ever dreamed of adventures beyond the stars comes the astonishing story of one who made it, Alex Rogan.
You have been recruited by the Star League to defend the frontier against Zur and the Kodan Armada.
Of all the life forms in all the galaxies, one has been chosen to be the Last Starfighter. The Last Starfighter, with the film of the number one hit Do They Know It's Christmas, the official Band-Aid story. In the West End and across London now, rated PG.
And I hope you've been thinking about it during the break. At the end of the last segment, I said I want you to each pick a favorite scene, if possible, from the last Starfighter, a film we all really, really enjoy. And so I'm gonna put George's feet to the fire. I know he's a huge fan of this film. Are you able to pick a favorite scene from the film, The Champion? What do you think?
Well, when you say a scene, no. Okay. Because I love the entire goddamn film, so they're all my favorite. Every scene in the movie is my favorite. I'm going to cheat like I always do in these situations, and I'm going to give you three scenes, but I'm going to talk about only one of them in depth.
Okay.
So my first favorite scene, which I think shows some of the really funny comedic chops of the film, is the scene where Alex Rogan is first being set with all the starfighters to hear the briefing about Xur and the Codan Armada, and he's carrying his uniform in his hand. He's got his plaid shirt with his translator on, and he's walking down this little narrow theater style aisle with these other creatures from across the galaxy that are part of this organization. And he steps on an octopus tentacled foot of one of these like squid like muscle guys from Venice Beach, and the guy just jumps up Hulk style, and he's like, I should crush you to Goran dust. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so funny. And Alex's reaction is not at all what mine would have been. I would have been jumping over the other aisle, hiding in the background. Alex just stands there and he looks at the guy and he goes, I'm sorry. This guy sits back down. The guy who's giving the briefing at the top, the president of the Federation or whatever, is just like, Jesus Christ, another one of these newbies. And everybody just goes back to what they were doing. Funny, funny scene.
Yeah.
Another one that I think tells about the real stakes of the movie and the real consequences, and is also arguably one of the better CGI scenes in the film, is the Death Blossom fight scene. So Alex Rogan and Grig are the last starfighter. They're trying to stop the Codan Armada from coming through and destroying not only Rylos, but the rest of the Federation.
And Earth.
As they're battling all these different Codan little fighter ships that are like too many to go against, they use the one last ditch effort weapon, Death Blossom, and this ship, it just opens up these beautiful little missile doors, and it spins on all three axes in space like you would imagine a spaceship could do if you had the thrusters going the right way, and just fires off all these laser missile things. It's just this beautiful scene of explosions. I love it. It shows just how close we were to losing the whole enchilada and the Codan Armada taking over everything. Great little scene in there. However, my favorite scene, since I got to pick only one, now that I've given you two other
ones. My 17th favorite scene.
Too late.
I think it's kind of something that kind of combines the two of them. And it starts off by showing you a little bit of what's really at stake in the film, but also putting a comedic twist on it. And that's the scene between Alex and the Beta unit when they're discussing whether or not Alex should go back or not. And what are you still doing back here and all this stuff? Mm-hmm. And at the very end of it, when Beta has tried to make him feel guilty and Alex is going to go outside and call Centauri, come back and get your Beta unit and all this crap. They're both sitting there yelling so loud that Lewis, the younger brother, who's asleep in the top bunk, wakes up.
Right.
And he looks up and he sees Alex standing, the real Alex standing in the room. And he looks up, he's like, Alex, what the hell's going on? Because the little boy cusses because that's important to the film.
It's funny.
Alex says, back to sleep, Lewis, or I'm telling mom about your Playboys. And the kid immediately drops his head to the pillow, snoring fake sounds.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Funny. And then the Beta unit says something as Alex walks out. And Lewis, like, what the fuck? And he pops his head down over the top bunk to look at the bottom bunk and sees the Beta unit, Alex, laying there. And he goes, what the shit? The Beta unit goes, I said, back to sleep, Lewis, or I'd tell mom about your Playboys. Like,
same line.
They just played this dream trick on the poor kid. Yep. I love that scene. Oh, cracks me up every time.
I love the little brother Lewis in general, and so that scene was great for me, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really funny. Now, Mo, what about you? Do you have a favorite scene of the film, or are you it's just too hard to choose?
It was really hard to tell. I mean, the part that I remember the most before I re-watched the movie for this podcast was all the scenes with Beta Alex, because I remember when I first saw the movie, I said, this is going to be stupid. Like, they generally, every other time they try to do like the duplicate person thing, it's always been just stupid. But this one was actually like funny. It was like good, you know, and that's the part that always got me. And even the part that reminds me of is like when he's trying to convince his girlfriend that he's not a real person.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
right?
And he gets shot. He just looks at her and says, "You see, like the wires." He looks at us. See,
see, told you.
Because the Beta unit has the Beta unit has such an attitude, right? Like the whole time, he's like, "I can't believe I'm on this backwater planet where nobody knows shit." Right? He's so mad the whole time.
The one part I never understood though is like the whole thing is like she asks, like, "Why aren't you up there fighting?" He's like, "Oh, we're not allowed to." And I'm like,
"Not allowed to?
Why? Why would you not be allowed to?"
Because movie reasons, Mo.
You know, she just accepts it and moves on. But
all right,
the whole way it was done, and I can see why they added more. I'm glad they did, because it really added, I think, another level to the movie. And it was a nice switch from what he's doing out in space. It's kind of like brought it back to Earth. No pun intended.
It's a little back and forth. You have the drama and then the little comic relief and the drama and the comic relief. But there, you still felt the stakes.
And you got to have the actor in both worlds at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was cute.
So how about you, John? What was yours?
You know, like you, I'm watching the whole film and there are like these huge spikes. Like, it's all interesting. Mm-hmm. There are little peaks and valleys of, you know, things get interesting and you're waiting on the next ebb and flow kind of thing. And I was thinking throughout watching it, like, what am I going to pick for my favorite scene? What can I champion? And then, as if the movie heard me, it said, "Oh, we've been saving this for you, John." At the end of the movie, he lands and he gets his girlfriend and they talk to all the people and everybody's happy. And now they know about this bigger universe outside of their little trailer park and everything. And that's great for all these people. And then Alex takes off in the ship. And there's this last scene where Lewis, the little brother, runs over to the Starfighter arcade machine as the rocket is taking off. It's backlit. There's smoke and a spotlight. And he looks so optimistic and so hopeful. And like, you can see that this little kid that was the little brother of a big brother that picked on him, not unlovingly, but he was the little brother, you know, now he knows, like, there are options out there for me. There's hope out there. There's more beyond my front step. There's more beyond this trailer park. And it's like, that kid didn't act all this, but because the movie built up to it, I felt it for the character. Mm-hmm. That now that he's seen all of this, his big brother is this thing, and maybe he can be too. He can move on and do something great. It's just the feel, like, I'm getting chills right now thinking about just the emotion. It was just in a shot. No lines, nothing was said, but everything built to it, kind of. And he got that last little, like, little kid, optimistic wonder, look what's possible for me in the future. There's a bigger world out there. I just thought that was such a nice, just a punctuation mark on the end of this film that could easily have not been there, but adding it gave it so much more meaningfulness to the entire journey, that it wasn't just about this one kid, was it? It was about us and the world and getting along outside of our own race or species or planet or whatever. Those are lofty goals that probably weren't intended, but I felt it because of how that scene kind of set it up at the end. So that's my favorite shot in there. It's I didn't pick three or four. Sorry, George, but that's the one that I picked that I think.
I mean, we can't all be
as
winning as I am, but
certainly not. There's plenty of you already. I agree. Yes. Okay.
One's enough.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.
If you're a diehard Gen X grown-up, you can pledge your support by clicking join on YouTube or by becoming a patron at genxgrownup.com/patreon.
Every night, Alex Rogan dreams of going far away.
You really are leaving here, aren't you?
Tonight, he will go further than he ever dreamed.
Welcome to Rylos, my boy.
He's one in a million.
Alert, we are under attack.
But the odds against him are a million to one. Alex Rogan is the last starfighter, rated PG. Starts Friday at select theaters. Check newspapers for locations.
Oh man, I mean, I mean, it's even talking about it, I am shocked I didn't rewatch this movie sooner.
You know, yeah, me too.
It really too. Took me this long to do it. Yeah. Although I have to admit, I'm still pissed that they didn't deliver the arcade game.
Yeah, yeah. We could. Well, George just told you he saw a fake one in Belt Pride. So, you know, interestingly, the arcade game fell through. They got a lot closer with home versions of a Last Starfighter game.
Okay.
So I don't know if you know about this, but so we all know Star Raiders. Great Atari game. The best version ever was on the Atari home computers, and it was a great version of the 2600 with a little numpad. Well, there was a sequel that came out called Star Raiders 2. However, it was initially developed as the tie-in for The Last Starfighter.
Oh, really?
Oh.
They developed it in 84 for Atari 8-bit computers and the 5200, but they never released it because the movie just kind of fell flat. And they're like, well, it's not that big of a brand. Why would we tie this to it? So they did some little finagling in the back end. They're like, yeah, we'll change some stuff around. And we'll release it in 86 and 87 for the Commodore 64 and the Atari 8-bit, Amstrad, Spectrum, all kinds of stuff. But if you play the game now, and by the way, this game will be on the 400 Mini that comes out later in March of this year.
Okay. Oh, nice.
Yeah, but it's called Star Raiders 2. It's actually The Last Starfighter. And if you follow the game, it just beat for beat, it's the story of the game. Same kind of thing.
That's pretty cool.
Wow. That wasn't the only one. Another game was in development. Now, a lesser system, the 2600, they're like, there's a million of them out there. They started a game. It was a prototype, but again, they ended up not releasing it because Starfighter was not a big deal. If you've ever heard of the Atari game Solaris, that is in lots of compilations, and it was on the Atari 50th anniversary celebration, that was going to be a Last Starfighter game. They just rebranded it and released it. Now 2600 is easier because there's no text or anything. There's nothing to read.
Right.
It's just, you know, sprites and ships. But they had two games in development they backed off of. They saw the light of day later, but they weren't branded Starfighter. So they tried.
Well, in the category of shit we should have got but never did.
Yeah.
they also did not ever release or create action figures for this movie. Now, we all know Star Wars set the mold at this era of our lives. Everything was action figure Star Wars. We had G.I. Joes coming out around this time, I think. I desperately, to this day, still want a set of Last Starfighter action figures. Apparently, Galoob, the company back from that time, was set up to create a bunch of prototype. They already did prototype action figures for the movie, but they didn't produce them for the mass market because, as the movie didn't do well, as we've talked about so many times, retailers said, nah, it's not going to be successful. No sense in putting them on our shelves. So they said, nah, we're not going to produce toys. And they had an interesting little differentiation point from other action figures. They were going to do them in two packs, which was not a thing really back then.
No,
so
not
you were going to get like Alex and Grig on one blister pack, and you were going to get like the mom and the girlfriend on one blister pack. And so you were going to have all these different figures. Even my little squid muscle Hulk Hogan guy was going to get an action figure. It was going to be so awesome. However, I have, doing research for this, found that there is another company in the like 2020 era. They did some custom figures, apparently, and they did them as two-pack blister packs. But good Lord, they're $50. And that's if you can find them.
Limited edition. Yeah.
I'm about to spend $50. Maybe more.
I think it's inevitable.
Yeah.
Just accept it. And when I read this one, I actually couldn't believe it. In 2007, they actually did a musical based on this.
What?
In New York. Yeah.
That would have been awesome.
Yep. I don't know if we get the soundtrack anywhere. I started looking for it. I couldn't find it, but it's got to be out there somewhere in the world.
Somebody recorded it. Right?
I can do that all day.
Oh, I didn't know George produced it.
Oh, is that what it was? Yeah. Do you have the book? But, can you share it with us, George? Yeah, that's great.
I'm sorry. That's under lock and key in the Prince Music Vault.
Is that what it is?
But yeah, that just blew my mind. Like, of all the movies to do a musical based on.
I'd watch that. I'd listen to that.
I think there's a lot there. Don't get me wrong. It just seems like an odd place to go.
Yeah. I bet it would have been fucking awesome, though.
The more you love the movie, the better it would have been.
I mean, only if you're a fan of the film.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
The more you loved it. Mm. Yeah. And you alluded to this a little bit earlier, I think, Mo or George, I forget who said it, but how there have been attempts to follow up on this since it's become kind of a cult classic, a favorite. In hindsight, people love to reboot it and redo it. The original guy, Butel, that wrote it, he no longer has the rights. Companies have gone away. And as of 2020, there were rumors of something, a reboot or a sequel or something. But more and more, the longer it goes between when they tried and now things are getting worse and worse. Right now, there's no traction on it whatsoever. And at 40th anniversary, this would be the perfect time to straighten that shit out and get this thing in development.
Oh, God.
I mean, they're doing other things. I mean, you know, the Beverly Hills Cop is getting a freaking sequel.
I know.
I mean, you know.
I know.
Yeah, but it's all about who holds the rights.
It's not unheard of.
Yeah, it's the rights holders.
It's all about who holds
people
the rights.
People fighting over that. Yeah.
That sucks.
So ultimately, whenever we look at a film that's 20, 30, 40 years old, we've talked about the effects. We've talked about some scenes. How does it hold up after all these years? Does this film hold up? And I want to posit the question first and primarily to you, George, as the biggest fan of this film for so many years. Do you think 40 years on, The Last Starfighter as a motion picture still holds up?
It's a great question to ask. Mm. We don't do it often enough when we do these lookbacks, and we probably should do it more often. I was 13 when this film hit, right?
Impressionable yet time.
I think that might be why it's more nostalgic and holds a special place in my heart than it might be for you or for Mo, because you guys were each 2 years successively older than me. John, you were 15. Mo, you were 17. This movie at that point of your life might not have meant as much to you as it did to me. Now, I'm not saying you don't love it or don't think it's a great film, but it definitely holds an incredibly special place in my heart.
Sure.
That being said, no, it doesn't really hold up as well as I would like it to. Yes, it holds up for the nostalgic benefit. It's kind of like you guys love some of the movies that I didn't watch then, but I watch them now and I'm like, I don't really like that. You know, like a Blues Brothers thing.
Call
I'm
it
not
the Blues
saying
Brothers
it's
effect.
Blues Brothers not a great film, but because I didn't watch it then. So with this movie, because I watched it then, for me personally, I rewatch this film 3 times a year. It's like I almost should just put it on my Google calendar. I love this film so much. It's one of those that, like, when I'm trying to go to sleep at night and I hit random on my Plex server to get a movie to come up, and I turn them like 20 of them off in a row, and then Last Starfighter hits, I'm like, fuck it, now I'm up till 2 in the morning, because I'm not just gonna watch that one for 5 minutes. I'm gonna watch it till it's over. The CGI does not hold up at all. Practical effects, like the costumes hold up decently. Griggs' costume, I think, is really effective. Yeah. Some of the other ones, not so much, like my Hulk Hogan squid guy. but it's kind of a mixed bag, and that's probably why it had a mixed successful rate in the theaters and since then.
Yeah. I mean, I said when I was picking a favorite scene that there weren't a whole bunch of spikes. You know, it was good with little peaks and valleys, but watching it now, I was waiting for the good part. And I don't mean that derogatorily. But in my mind, there were big, good parts. Like, what was it that I loved so much about it? What was it? And I'm waiting for that thing. And it turns out it's just kind of flatline is unfair. I don't mean that again. I'm not dogging on the movie. But it was just kind of like it got from point A to point B. It told the story well. The characters were great. But nothing got my attention. I'm like, oh, crap. Like, nothing got really my attention that way, you know? So as a movie, it doesn't quite hold up. But like you, even being a couple of years older, I mean, for the same reason, it kind of does. What do you think, Mo? How do you feel about it?
Well, I mean, if I looked at it just like the writing, I think the writing holds up.
Sure.
Okay.
On this. You know
maybe
what I mean?
Not the dialogue, but the story beats. Yeah.
The story beats. Yeah. Maybe the dialogue could be updated a little bit. It's a little corny some places.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
But I think the general beats, it's kind of like it's a basic classic story. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, I think it does hold up. But the thing is that it's hard to watch it with the special effects and some of the other very 80s things that you see it as far as the costuming and stuff like that. You know, it's hard not to be like, it looks a little dated. But sometimes we do these movie things. I'll like watch parts of a movie, right? The whole thing, right? I'll watch some key things or I'll fast forward or whatever. Sure. I sat and started watching it. And next thing I know, I just watched the whole thing.
I watched all of it too.
It kept me interested the whole time, which I'm like, there's modern movies that don't do that.
So, it's a fast watch. It doesn't feel like the hour and a half it is.
It doesn't. Yeah. It's just an easy watch. So, yeah. So I guess in some ways it doesn't. In some ways it does.
Yeah. There's got nothing wrong with it. It's an old movie that it holds up pretty doggone well for the money that was put into it, for the talent they had available. And I think, as a Gen X landmark film, couldn't be much happier with it. Last Starfighter, happy 40th anniversary to you.
40 years.
That is going to wrap it up for this Backtrack edition of the show. Don't worry, we have another one coming your way in 2 weeks, and next week is the standard edition of our show. Until then, I am John. George, thank you so much for being here, man.
Yes, sir.
Mo, no, I appreciate you, buddy.
Always fun, man.
Fourth listener, it's you we all appreciate most of all. We can't wait to talk to you again next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, buddy.
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. Watch your shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries.
Basically, life sucks as a grown-up. Is that the sound effect? Thanks, I'll use that one.
No, I'm trying. It's terrible.
We're adding it now.
Thanks.
Don't have to do it in post.
Could someone just act out an old commercial, please? I don't have to do that here.
Mikey won't eat.
When I think about my lucky lady, I pick up Lucky Strikes. Oh, lucky God. Strikes when you're thinking of nice. That lucky lady.
Nice. I don't want to grow up furry, my toys are screwed. It's a VHS. It's kind of warbly. It's different. Okay, here we go. Media. Did you like that?
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo. And for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book. And together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.